Hey everyone, welcome or welcome back to the Gary V Audio Experience. We have an awesome episode for you today, but we just want to remind you before the episode starts that if you're listening to this episode on Spotify, please leave your comments in the Q&A section under this episode. If you're listening on Apple, Google, or anywhere in between, please tweet Gary at Gary V. Make sure you join the Discord to stay up to date on all things V Friends, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey, Gary, a lot going on this month. Woof.
A lot going on this month.
We're just going to dive right in. Today, we're talking about social platforms and culture. A lot to go through and super fired up to bring John Morgenstern up. Our John Morgenstern, he's heads up all things media buying and he helps keep us in tune with what's now and what's next. And you guys are going to lay it down first before we bring in some of our guests from the outside world. J-Mo, let's bring him up.
Yo.
Here he is.
Hey, G. John,
good to see you, brother. How are things?
Good. A lot going on.
Indeed. So, J-Mo, when we talk about PAC, platforms and culture, that's a acronym that we're spending a lot of time here at Vayner. For everybody who's watching, first of all, let's give some shout outs. Sean Toole, I see you on Facebook. Jason Campbell on Facebook, good to see you. Suzette on LinkedIn. Christian from Copenhagen on LinkedIn. Kevin H from Florida on YouTube. Thank you for everybody who's tuning in. We have a big time show today. I believe for everybody who's watching, entrepreneurs, creators, influencers, Fortune 5000, CEOs, CMOs, Fortune 500, CEOs, CMOs, B2B, B2C, I believe that being an expert in the platforms and in what's happening in culture is the only way to be a contemporary marketer. When you hear being consumer centric, when you think about your career coming from social code, being in marketing for a long time, spending a ton of times with the platforms on the media side, what stands out in this framework? What have you learned here at Vayner in the last 10 years on this that, you know, was something maybe you didn't believe as much? Like, give everyone a little lay land of your brilliant mind.
Yeah. We've talked about this before, Gary. It feels like in many ways, like right now is the 2011, 2012 vibes, platforms wise, as far as like it's chaotic. Some things feel early, like hacks, organic is back. And those were like the glory days. Those were really fun times for me, right? Because running ads in Facebook in 2011, there was no newsfeed ads. It was desktop only, two ad units, like just figuring it out on the fly. I think consumer-centric, platform-centric, to me, as it pertains to the media buying side, is like being super close to all the features that the platforms are rolling out, like TikTok right now with saves, like favorites, you know, the bookmark icon. That we think is such a good signal. We're like, okay, people are gonna come back to this later. You can see it in ads reporting. You can see it like catch on as you run ads. Oh, people are using this more. And it's like an interesting signal when you can't track towards purchase. So like following all the different features and things going on with the platforms, then seeing it roll into like ads land and like playing around in the ads interface.
As you know, educate a lot of people here who don't work in Fortune 500 land. Something as small as a save function in TikTok as a feature from the platform, the P, that's not something a CMO of a Fortune 500 company even gives a doesn't even know is happening, let alone gives a shit about, correct?
Yes, 100%. Most media buyers don't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, Fortune 5000 companies don't give a shit. This is kind of the point that we're trying to make in this session, right? That these little nuances of the understanding of the platforms is actually big dividends for building brand and businesses, yes?
Yes.
And that we see entrepreneurs a lot of time or very small companies take advantage of this. And this is why we've seen so much market share gains in the last decade, because this is the Fashion Novas, this is the, you know, Allbirds, this is the Warby Parkers, this is the Harry's, this is all these CPG, Mr. Beast Burgers, Fernando's coming up in a little bit. Like, these are the things that we're seeing literally a human being, the Gary V's, the Mr. Beast, the D'Amelio, like, if you are perfect at platform, you can outflank the biggest companies in the world because they're all the way at reach and frequency and they don't give a shit about this little nuance. We're arguing here, these little nuances times 75 across 12 platforms, and then we'll get to the culture part, is the punchline of opportunity, yes?
Yes. Yeah. And like how big agencies typically get the flow of information, like, hey, new literature, new hotness, new best practices from the platforms. The delta has never been farther apart. We're like, I'm in a bunch of Facebook groups of like media buying ninjas and like Facebook ads entrepreneurs. And like the insights and the things they're messing with and like doing and noting, it's like a different universe. And it used to be closer. It used to be like, yeah, like lookalikes are good. And it's just so different now. And it keeps me on my toes because everyone, because of you, and it's like, oh, you're Gary's media buying person. Like they're throwing all their heat at me. and so I just like staying on my toes. Like it's so democratized that it's all about like.
And being talk about the culture, right? As a math kid, the culture, which is really the art. What have you learned about, for example, the green screen that I did for winetext.com, right? Like, what are you learning around the culture part that maybe is defragging that brilliant math brain of yours last decade?
Yeah, I mean, it's, when we talk about it, some people, entrepreneurs, like Facebook ad, you know, junkies are like, yeah, duh, I've been doing that. But it really, as intuitive as it is, it hasn't been where, outside of reach and frequency, where you always make out the point of like, hey, that's potential impressions. Like, you know, just because they watched a second or two, that might mean that's just the average time it takes to scroll through a newsfeed. The rub was, well, what could supplant those metrics for like, do you have people's attention? And the rise of the TikTok era, it was like, does it get organic distribution? Because if TikTok, if Reels, if Shorts like takes your content and shows out organically, like they don't fuck around in those algorithms with like potential reach. It's like, is this good for our users? So that as a signal of like, you have the attention and reading the replies and comments, like, I just watched this, I'm gonna buy it. Like what you've always said, that matters a lot. And then using that as the seed of what goes into your ads, like the ads paid world is just a subset of the organic world. It's the same stuff, but you have to fuse it with business and it can't just be like, you know, teddy bears and random viral stuff. You have to be thoughtful. That's why we call it strategic organic content. But
to just give a ton of value for the entrepreneurs and executives, give me on the platform side the JMO top 10, and whether it's 10 or 7, give me 10 little nuances of products on the organic or media side that you're obsessed or curious or excited about right now. You know, Snap Spotlight this, or Pinterest that, or Be Real this, or Twitter that. Give me a fucking November 16, 2022 JMO special.
I'll throw all my heat and some I actually just got from you, so big ups. The green screen hack is like number one because it's so easy, where you can just like screenshot an article, do a green screen over it, or if it's not you, hire a creator, influencer, someone who works at the brand to do it. You can do many a day, all sorts of articles. Gallery will write articles just to be green screened. It's ridiculously easy and works. Like that's where your content on WineText, where you did a green screen, did way better than all the stuff you actually like spent way more time shooting and doing. So that's number one across platforms, TikTok and Reels. On Reels, this might be something you haven't heard
Facebook
from me yet.
Reels, for instance.
Instagram Reels, but it's probably the same on both. I can only say for sure with Instagram Reels, the audio you choose like matters more than on TikTok. Like if you use the top like funny sound that's trending on Reels, you can draft off of that trend more than you can on TikTok, like notably more.
Yeah.
That's one. That gives to the whole rub about music and like licensing and rights. And I do have a lot of empathy for brands with that. I know you do too. That's always tricky. But those two are really interesting. My third is an ads hack, which is around how to like force serve your YouTube ads just in Shorts, because Google doesn't want you to do that and they make it tricky. So we're using that with a lot of brands right now, because you're talking a big game about Shorts organic. They're of course coming to me and are like, let's do ads, but YouTube video action, it's like, we'll just serve it everywhere, don't worry about it. So to do the Shorts hack, we had to like tinker. It was again old school, like 2011 2012 stuff. That's number three.
We're out of time, JMO. We got to keep it moving. I love you, thank you, we'll have you back
for sure later.
We gotta get him back for the other five.
Agreed.
he's got so much. All right, we're lucky to have Fernando Machado come back. He joined us when he was all about burgers, and now he's all about gaming. Fernando, you can tell he leads some of the marketing for the most exciting titles, including Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, Overwatch, Candy Crush, and so much more. We're super fired up to have you back, Fernando.
Now, it's my pleasure to be here. It's fun to be with you guys again.
Fernando, how have you been, my friend?
I'm good, man. I was looking for like someone who had a more cluttered shelf than mine at home. And I finally, I have a similar collection though.
We got to talk about that offline. For everybody's watching, Fernando is, you know, I'm going to make him blush here, truly actually a legend in the marketing industry. One of the most admired, sought after, respected CMOs in the world. Obviously now running the helm at Activision Blizzard. Fernando, when you see the, you know, platforms and culture, what does it really mean to be consumer centric? The Burger King work now here in this entertainment media gaming world, you've really had the fortune, and probably this is why you selected them, to be at the helm of brands that people really care about and that are really consumer centric, truly actually. So, you know, when you see this, what does it really mean to be consumer-centric? How do you answer that from your purview?
Look, I mean, I try to have my finger in the pulse of what's going on out there. You know what I mean? Like, and can be overwhelming at times. I try to see like where culture is going. And hopefully every now and then we have a chance of influencing culture a little bit too. And it really doesn't matter if it's gaming or a burger or a soap. You know, like I think if you have a powerful insight, a strong positioning, and you embrace creativity, you'll be able to influence culture in whatever category you are in and whatever country you are in. So to me, like it's about seeing where people's minds are heading to, you know, like and trying to find inflection points and trying to predict things and trying to do things that are going to surprise people.
Oh, I'm sorry, please finish.
No, I think it's less about like doing a ton of research and because research, everyone has the same data, you know what I mean? Like, I remember the first time we've met and you were telling me about how you used to look at where drivers were looking at so that you could put the signs of the wine store.
That's right.
And you figured out that your thing was not about the wine necessarily, it was more about a consumer behavior.
Yes.
You know, to me it's about observation.
Yes.
and seeing where people are looking at, you know, like pretty much like what you did back in the day, and I think you continue to do so well.
George Q from our office, who's worked with you in the past, just said I miss you, Fair. Fernando, what about big companies? Where do they get this wrong? Like, you know, you've been in enough at this point. I've always felt that the reason you've over-indexed in this industry is you are a little bit more towards my world of common sense, consumer behavior, culture. You know, what meetings do you walk out of like, ah, damn it, this could have been better. And the reason we're doing this, we're just so big. Or what is the, you know, for a lot of people here who are entrepreneurs or getting a lot of youngsters in here trying to get into marketing, what's the cliche reason big companies are bad at it?
I think that big companies or any company for that matter can be bad at it when everything is done through full consensus and when people are not empowered to take a direction. You know what I'm saying? Like, if your idea of putting signs around like Tenafly in New Jersey, like had to be agreed with your dad and 10 other employees in the company, they would be like, no, let's
buy. It's why when I see co-CEO, I jump out the window. When you have two CEOs, you have none.
I freak out when I see dotted lines.
Right.
But I think that's,
you know, Fernando, you'll like this. You know what I have in my company? Because we're a global organization now. We're 2,000 people. It's starting to be there. We have something called the Supreme Court. When there is, in theory, a dotted line, all I say is, I don't want you to spend more than 1 hour debating. If you two don't agree and you have your hands in this jar, you must come to me, give me your point of view. I will make a Supreme Court decision. And we, and the speed and lack of politics that we've been able to do with dotted, I love you for saying that. Dotted lines are destroying corporations. Yeah.
I think the struggle is when everything is driven by consensus, when people are not empowered, when people are risk averse, so they just want to vote, not officially voting, but like they want to hear absolutely everyone. And I don't mind hearing everyone, but someone at the end of the day needs to make a decision. And you're probably not going to please everyone. When you try to please everyone, that's when I think it breaks. That's when you land on the most common denominator, which is usually not the best way to go. It's where generic lives. So I think that's where we all struggle, I would say.
A lot of agencies watch this. I always love interacting with my contemporaries when they watch this stuff. So I haven't asked a lot of questions from that standpoint. What is the biggest mistake agencies are making? You don't have to talk about your direct partners. I don't know who that is, but like in theory, what you're seeing, like as you head into 2023, what do you want more from your agency partners, and what do you want less from when it comes to being consumer centric?
Yeah, like I think, look, I mean, what I always want more from is close collaboration and for them to put more ideas on the table than I can execute. You know what I mean? Like for them to know my business, know what my strategy is, know what we are trying to achieve, and literally like machine gun me with ideas. I would rather that we focus the time on that part than on doing bureaucratic stuff. You know what I'm saying? And ideas that will scare us, you know what I mean? Like that will push us. I think that it's a tricky thing. It's what I'm saying is like easier said than done. Like I think that one of the biggest mistakes that agencies can make is to try to please the client.
I agree.
To present to the client what you think the client will like. Because if the client were an amazing creative person, the client would be sitting on the agency side. You know what I mean? Like the fact that I was lucky enough to be part of some amazing creative projects doesn't mean that I'm creative. The ideas were not coming from me. You know, it probably only means that I know how to brief well, that I have some criteria, and I have a great relationship with the creative partners. So that to me is the biggest mistake. You know what
I mean? Which distribution platforms, whether it's connected TV, whether it's social, whether it's something traditional, has you personally most excited about storytelling on?
I'm excited about TikTok, to be honest with you, these days. And I know that you talk a lot about that. And it's just a different way to do storytelling. You know what I mean? And I think that we are all trying to figure out for each franchise, for each brand, for each company, what is that way? You know, I'm excited about working with creators and influencers. You know, like you were talking about Fashion Nova, I think, like earlier, like, you know, like I think that there is there is a new way of doing things that I think we're all kind of still learning, a way to like leverage power users of the brand, to leverage creators out there. Like the level of engagement that we are getting with stuff that we do when we partner with creators is infinite times higher.
Of course.
And how to do that without trying to control the content, which is the stupid thing. You hire a creator and then you try to control the content of the
company. I always tell my clients, you get to pick the creator, but let her or him do their thing. It's why we pick them in the first place. Getting them to do an ad destroys them and you.
Yeah. But I think that we are in the journey in the sense of like proving to companies like the ROI on things like that. You know, like everyone is used to a certain way to do things. And it's proved, tried and tested and proven and easy to calculate payback, ROI, like everything. And I think that when we try to do things in a different way, it's harder, especially like the first time you do it, to prove the case. So it's finding that balance where we can experiment and learn and show that like we can evolve in the media landscape and that we can like tell stories in a different way than just like long format films or an ad or an event. You know what I mean?
I love it. Fernando, always such a pleasure, my friend. Have a great holiday.
No, you too, man. Awesome to see you guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Fernando. Next up, super fired up to welcome Omar Raja. He's the leading voice behind ESPN's SportsCenter Instagram account, and he also makes appearances across platforms, across shows like HoopStreams, the college football playoff show, and SportsCenter. Thanks for joining us, Omar.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
Omar, didn't I also see you in like a Taco Bell? Did I just
Yeah. You did.
I was hyped.
Yeah,
I
was that was awesome. Man. That was really cool.
How are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm quite well. Why don't you spend 1 second actually tell everybody how you came up the game, because I think it's going to get people hyped and then we'll go into it.
Cool. It really started, you know, people think about Instagram. When I was 12 or 13 years old, I wanted to be a YouTuber. So I was making like NBA 2K videos, Madden videos. And honestly, looking back at it, it never really popped off to the level I wanted to. But what it did was I got so many reps and I learned so much about community building and all that stuff. Was when Instagram came around, I was like, hey, no one's doing video well. None of the media companies were posting highlights or getting the funny moments that were resonating more than like a dunk, right? There was a lot of fan moments of fans reacting in the background to a play or a coach is reacting. And so I started an account called House of Highlights. I made it my own goal to like build my own little, you know, sports page. And honestly, it was just a passion. It wasn't supposed to be this page that now has, I think, 35 million followers. So I did that. It blew up and LeBron followed, Cristiano Ronaldo followed. So, you know, and
those two followed, you just lost your fucking mind, right?
You know what? The first one was Snoop Dogg. I remember he was the first celebrity to follow. And I remember calling my dad, who like doesn't know anything about culture, right? And I was like, do you know who Snoop Dogg was? He's like, of course I know who Snoop Dogg was. So
that's when you made it.
That, I was like, I've made it. Once I've got my dad's
that immigrant family life, when your parent can co-sign, it's
yes. Yeah.
Look, this is really fun to have you on this show because we know each other a little bit, haven't had the luxury of too much chop up time, but as we both have navigated this last decade, I think this will land with you. There, you know, I think you, and I'm proud to say, I think I, and there's others like us, this is the thing we really focus on. It's pack, it's platform and culture, right? Not only did you understand the white space on Instagram at the right time, you also had to really understand how that platform was working. So like, what were the design types? What was the copy, the hashtags, the every hack?
Yeah.
You know, what are you seeing today? What's the state? No different than J-Mo, who's in the trenches talking about saves on TikTok. What's the Omar special on platform and culture? What are like things that entrepreneurs in Fortune 100 should be thinking about?
Oh, I mean, just all the different types of content. Like you guys talk about green screen videos. I'm a huge fan of that, but also voiceover videos. So I believe in the storytelling of, I'm going to take you at Steph Curry's workout and show you what it's like. This Saturday, I'm going to USC versus UCLA. So many people are interested in that game because it's a big, you know, two college football teams. And I'm going to take you behind the scenes. I'm going to show you what the players are working on. I'm going to tell you what they were yelling about after the game ends, whether it was good or whether it was bad. So I'm really big on storytelling and just, I have this mic right here and I'm going to tell you a bunch of stories that I think are relevant. So I think that's another format of stuff. I also will say like consistency.
Real quick, Omar, I apologize. LinkedIn user 1234 says, damn, Gary, you getting raided? That siren is wild. No, this is called New York City.
Yes.
How
yes.
we fucking do it.
Yes.
Just want to make sure if anyone was confused. Keep going, Omar.
No, I think consistency is also just big. Being on every platform. One of the big learnings I had with House of Highlights was we were so big on Instagram. But then we made a TikTok account and the account was verified and it had like 100 followers. And all the comments were, what is House of Highlights and how did you guys get verified? You shouldn't have it, right?
You're like, what?
I'm like, I thought we had Gen Z on lock. So it was such a, you know, humbling moment. And, you know, that's when we went hard on YouTube and Instagram and Twitter. And, you know, even now for my personal accounts, I'm trying to be big on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff.
What, how do you feel about, I don't know how in the trenches you are on this these days, but I have a feeling you are. Do you get excited when something you post or your team posts that you think is going to crush fails? Like, it's weird. I'm at this
point. I love that.
Yeah. I had a
so I'll tell you why I love that. One of my favorite things to do on TikTok right now is I remix my video. So if a video does bad that I believe in, one of the videos I actually had was my story. It was like how I started House of Highlights and how I ended up at ESPN. And when I first made the video, it was 55 seconds. It was just way too long. And it took me 4 tries to make that video. I made that video 4 times and I think it got 1,000 views, 100 views every single time I posted it. The fifth time I posted that video, it has 9 million views.
Really? You
know what I mean? Yes.
Let's and so this is important for everyone to hear.
Yes. I made a video, why do UFC fighters put on Vaseline? And, you know, before every fight, people, you see that. First time I did it, 5,000 views. I changed it. I'm really harsh on my video. If I believe on it, I'll take out parts. I'll redo the hook. 19 million views on TikTok. I'm not making any of this up.
It's no, I know. I know you're not. You've saw the headline, I'm sure, because you're in the trenches like I am. Mr. Beast talks about spending six figures on a thumbnail.
Yes. Yeah. It's just the things.
It matters. Like, I don't, you know, I, for one, you know, am like in love with the humility that comes with it not hitting.
Yes.
What I like about you, and I think we don't do this enough, Andrew, for sure, on our side, I don't work it enough because I'm always on to the next. But there are absolutely things that I need to do more working it. And there's a lot of people that run that model. And for a lot of people watching right now, going that second, third, fourth, fifth edit and giving it a shot, especially with the way the world works now, where the algorithms are just kind of like taking it and like letting you win based on the creative, you know, variable, not just how many followers you have, is a game changer, no?
I agree. And I think another thing also is like, it can be the littlest edit for like on Instagram. What we realize is if a video did bad and it didn't have text on screen, hey, you just need to add that text on screen and maybe add wait for it or watch the kid in the back or watch this fan's reaction. And that video might be going from having 5,000 likes in 20 minutes to 100,000. It really was the most mind-blowing.
When you work it, do you delete the original from the grid?
I do. If I know I'm going to post it back, if I know if I'm going to do edit two or edit three, I usually do delete it.
How quickly?
I know it depends on the platform. I know on TikTok within 20, I know on Instagram within 20 minutes.
I'm in love with this Vaseline thing.
Yeah.
Will you take it down as quickly as 30, 40 minutes, or will you give it like 3-4 hours, or how do you
play? That one was like, I gave it a day because I was like, maybe it's popular.
What's the fastest you'll take down and when one, you know you want it?
1 hour. 1 hour on TikTok, 10 minutes on Instagram.
10 minutes on Instagram. You know that you want to do something about Cam Reddish is hot a little bit for the Knicks.
Yeah.
Super hot. He's into coffee. You're like, I have this take on Cam Reddish and coffee.
Yes.
Post it on the gram. And in 10 minutes, because of the math, you know that it didn't hit, but you know you're going to give it another at bat. You will take it down.
Yes. We have it figured out. Every algorithms obviously change, but for the most part, they don't change like every other day.
Yeah,
so we know that like within 2 minutes, this video should have 500 likes. If, you know, within 5 minutes, it should have 1,000. Like, we already know all the built-in stuff. We want a post in 20 minutes to have 50,000 likes, whatever it is.
Oh, a lot of people feel the takedown is not good. Like, I haven't seen that, and it seems like you haven't seen that either. Like, the taking it down and coming back a couple hours later with something different while you work on re-editing that, you have not seen a negative effect.
I've never seen it. I've done it since 2015.
For a lot of people, they don't realize the takedown. How quickly on a takedown will you post something right behind it? Like, for example, on the gram, how often do you post?
We post 10 to 12 times a day.
Right. So every 2 hours, but
sleep
time, you're probably not 24/7. So
the one tricky thing is, imagine an NBA game or a busy Saturday night, UFC, NFL, college football, all these things are happening. You can be posting on top of each other. And sometimes it feels like,
this is live. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels like, you know, you don't want to be posting everything on top of it. I'm a big believer in, if your content is good enough, it will eventually stand out. So it doesn't matter if you give it 2 minutes of breathing room or 2 hours.
Are you saying, boom, I posted something. It's kind of hitting a little something, but it's a Saturday night with a lot of sports. I'm not scared to post another thing, because if that first thing is really that good, it will continue to do well.
Yes.
This is something I believe as well that really scares the shit out of people. They want to let it breathe when they don't realize you could have two planes flying at the same time.
Absolutely, Gary. You're 100% correct.
Well, listen, we got to run, but I think people got a fuckload of value in the last 4 minutes, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gary. Talk to you soon, bro.
Thanks, Omar. Thanks, Gary, for joining us.
A lot of great stuff, everybody. Please hang on to the show. I got to go to meetings, but there's some fire stuff coming up, stuff that will actually bring value the same way you just saw. Bye, Andrew.
Thanks, Gary. Love you.
Thanks so much for listening or watching to that episode of the Gary V Audio Experience. We really hope you enjoy it, and we hope to see you next time.